Welcome to the Gay Buddhist Forum, where teachers from all schools of Buddhism offer their perspectives on the Dharma and its application in modern times, especially for LGBTQI audiences. These talks are offered freely to the world and made possible by appreciative listeners. If you would like to support our efforts to share the Dharma with underserved audiences, please visit gaybuddhist.org. There you can donate, find a list of upcoming speakers, or enjoy many hundreds of these recorded talks dating back to 1996.
Well, welcome back, everyone. At this point in our program, it is our custom to go around the room and introduce ourselves by saying our first or last name. So I'll start out. My name is David Lewis.
I'm Richard.
George.
Ricardo.
Roger. James. Clark. Jack.
John.
And Ed. Amy.
Marty.
James.
Woody.
Doug.
My name is Clint.
I'm Jim Stewart.
David.
My name is Daniel.
Richard Azzolini.
George.
My name is Jerry Jones.
I'm Tom Bruin.
My name is Michael.
I'm Richard.
My name is Brian.
Lee Robbins.
I'm Oswaldo.
My name is David.
Roger.
My name is Gary.
My name is Michael.
My name is Jay.
My name is Manuel.
My name is Casey.
Jose.
My name is Roy.
I'm Carl Wolf.
And Jim.
Doug Hall.
Thank you. It is my pleasure this morning to introduce our speaker, Arjun Kala. I've had the pleasure of sitting a couple of retreats with Andrea and have benefited greatly from her wisdom, so it's a great pleasure to have you here this morning. Andrea has been practicing insight meditation since 1996 and under Gil Pronstahl's guidance began teaching meditation classes in 2003. She's particularly drawn to intensive retreat practice and has done a number of long retreats, both in the U.S. and in Burma. During one long practice period in Burma, she ordained as a nun with Saidao U Janaka. Andrea teaches at residential retreats for the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City and the Tuesday morning and Thursday evening meditation classes, also there.
Right. Yes.
She is in the Spirit Rock Teacher Training Program, which at Cornfield and Joseph Goldstein. So
actually, that's done now.
That's done now.
Done with the training.
So welcome, Andrea.
Thank you. So good morning. It's good to be here. This is my second time here. It's nice to be back. I really appreciate the feeling in this room. I love the exposed brick and just the warmth of the feeling in here. So it's lovely to be sitting with you. This morning I thought I would talk about delusion. Delusion is one of three mental experiences or mental qualities that are particularly pointed to in Buddhist practice as being the sources or the roots of the ways that we suffer, the ways that we end up in reactivity. And I'm sure many of you are familiar with this list of three: greed, aversion, and delusion. So greed and aversion, often people have a pretty good sense of, greed being the quality of mind that leads us into wanting to hold on to or keep or obtain things that are pleasant. And so this can lead us into some strugglesome reactivity if we can't get the things that we want, or if we are afraid of losing the things that we have. So that movement of greed can lead us into some struggle, into some suffering in that direction. The movement of aversion is the movement of wanting to get rid of, to push away, to control, to fix, to change things that we don't like. And this also leads to many different forms of reactivity. This is one that I'm particularly familiar with. It's with these three, greed, aversion, and delusion, we all tend to, of course, be familiar with all of them or have aspects of all of them, but many of us are kind of biased towards one or the other of them. And for me, my favorite is aversion. So this is one I'm very familiar with. So emotional reactivity arising out of aversion can be states like frustration, irritation, anger, cruelty, annoyance, all the way to rage. So these states of greed and aversion basically come from a place of not being satisfied with the world as it is, somehow wanting to change or fix or alter things as they are. So when I talk about these three, greed, aversion, and delusion, people can often resonate with greed and aversion and understand it and can begin to see, you know, how do we observe, how do we get familiar with greed and aversion in our experience? They're pretty obvious and pretty clear to us, or they can be clear to us. But delusion is a little more obscure, it seems. And so I'd like to spend some time today exploring what delusion is, what it means from this perspective of this teaching of the Buddhist understanding. What is delusion, and how can we begin to see it? I mean, almost by definition, you know, when we're deluded, we don't know we're deluded. So how can we begin to uncover this delusion? So I'll start by pointing to the kinds of delusion that can arise out of greed and aversion. If we are in a state of aversion, of not liking something, we may, that becomes kind of a filter on our experience. And we have a tendency to see things through that filter and miss things that are not in line with that filter. So in my own experience, for instance, I had a filter, a belief about being miserable. I was a miserable person. And I found ample proof of that in my experience. And yet when I actually felt happy, the delusion of miserableness, or the kind of filter of miserableness, was so strong that my mind would do something like, well, yeah, I'm happy now, but really I know what I am is miserable. So that, you know, out of greed and aversion, we can miss or not really take in what is actually happening right now. So those tendencies towards greed and aversion can act as a delusional filter. And so delusion can rise out of greed and aversion. But delusion is actually a more fundamental state, in a way. The delusion, greed and aversion are actually fundamentally rooted in delusion. If we didn't have delusion, greed and aversion would not arise. And I'll try to explain this and go through an exploration around this with you today. So we can have delusion in the absence of greed and aversion. But we cannot have greed and aversion in the absence of delusion. There are three kind of basic forms of delusion that Well, I've got kind of three ways we can look at delusion. And I'll explore each of these three different ways just a little bit. And some of them seem like they're fairly tied or can be tied up with greed or aversion at times. So I'll try to tease it apart, how we can see delusion or understand delusion as being kind of a more fundamental quality, that we can actually be delusional without having greed or aversion tied up with it. So these three aspects of delusion are an aspect of being kind of disconnected. Kind of the absence of awareness is a form of delusion. Then the second one is a kind of a denial of what is actually happening, being in denial about what's happening. And the third is from a kind of distorted perception. So I'll go through each of these. So the first, this not connecting. We're not connected. We're perhaps, you know, lost in thought or in a state of dullness or sleepiness. When we're just simply not connecting with experience, there's some delusion present of what's actually happening. And it's a very simple, this is a kind of a very simple delusion. But it can manifest, particularly when we're lost in thought, as kind of living in an unreal world. There was an example I had of this at one point, very clear example of this in my experience. I had broken up with my boyfriend some years ago when this particular incident happened. And at one point, I had done a lot of work about the anger I felt about him and had let go of all of it, pretty much. And so there wasn't a lot of reactivity when thoughts about him came up in my mind. And one day I was walking down the street and I woke up into being lost in thought about being back in relationship with him. And, you know, if I had been earlier, before I had worked through so much of the anger, whenever I woke up lost in that kind of thought, immediately the response was anger or hurt or depression or something like that. There was a kind of a quick response. So I didn't really get to see that I had been lost in that world. But this time, because there was no reactivity, I really just kind of got to see that I was coming out of this bubble. It's like a bubble of belief that I was in relationship with him again, in my mind. The bubble burst, and in that moment of the bubble bursting where I had woke up into that, kind of living in that world, suddenly what I experienced was confusion. Because it's like, wait a minute, I'm not in relationship with him. Wait, just 2 seconds ago I was right in that world again. So our thoughts, you know, being lost in our world of thoughts, that's living in a place of delusion. And it was very clear for me because it was such a contrast between what the thoughts were and what my actual experience was. So that's one way that delusion can manifest. It can be experienced as uncertainty, as confusion. It can be experienced as doubt. The second form is this kind of denial. And denial is often, I think, bound up with aversion or greed. For instance, in it's a kind of a form of not wanting to see the truth. Some forms of denial are not wanting to see the truth. So this is the proverbial elephant in the room. That everybody knows the elephant's in the room, but nobody is saying the elephant is in the room. You know, the kind of classic sense of maybe if I ignore this, it will go away. That kind of denial. I mean, there is a form of delusion in that, and but it's tied up with aversion often, that kind of form of denial. This form of denial might also manifest on the side of being tied up with greed. For instance, having the delusion that a particular love relationship will last forever, You know, just as you head into the, you know, the romantic beginning phases of relationship, just how the mind believes in that state that this person is just perfect and will make you happy for the rest of your life. So the that's a form of denial also. You know, the reality of the person and who they are and who you are kind of being ignored in that state. So when I initially was thinking about denial, I thought, well, you know, is there a form of denial that is not tied up with greed or aversion? So often the examples we come up with about denial are kind of linked to, you know, either wanting to keep something and kind of ignoring the bad things, or wanting to get rid of something, or just ignoring that something unpleasant is there, hoping that it will go away. So I thought about it for a while, and I realized there are some forms of delusion that are unconnected with greed and aversion, or maybe way less connected with greed and aversion, that the delusion is more fundamental. So I came up with a couple of different examples of this. One is a kind of a view that's formed based on being told something repeatedly. So, for example, in our culture, this may be cultural views. You know, one great example of this is that we are told repeatedly, over and over again, that the way to be happy is to get what we want. And we believe this. I mean, we believe it because we hear it all the time, and we also believe it because there is a confirmation that when we get what we want, there's a moment of happiness. But it's not a very lasting happiness. And so there's a delusion around this that, you know, we keep believing, well, it didn't work that time, but maybe next time. Or maybe if I just string enough of these moments together, I'll be happy. If I get what I want enough, then I'll be happy. And so there's a kind of a delusion around that. Another form of perhaps cultural delusion is you know, in America, in the United States, there's this very strong undercurrent of if you work hard enough, you can be happy. Or, you know, something along those lines, that everybody in this country has equal opportunities and everybody can be happy. This kind of, you know, underlying belief, I think, is kind of the seeds or the root of what we can call, what I think has been called, the kind of blindness of a person in privilege. You know, white men particularly, and white people in general, that, you know, not seeing the privilege that we're swimming in, that we're living in, and how that privilege is not the same for everybody. So that's a form of delusion that is culturally, you know, it's been repeated to us so much that we believe it, and we don't see it. So that's one way of a denial, kind of being more, you know, not so much out of greed or aversion. It's kind of a not really seeing the truth of what's happening. A second is a view formed out of misunderstanding information. And that often I think there's an intimate connection between delusion and belief. You know, delusion and views that we hold. Essentially, it's kind of misinformed views that are the basis of delusion. And so one way that we might just be misinformed about something, or we might misunderstand something that has been told to us and create a view based on that. So here's an example on this one. When I was a kid, I took an art class, and the teacher was teaching us how to draw apples. And she was very good at showing us the color side of the, you know, how to see the apple in terms of color. And, you know, showing us how the color shifted as it, as you, you know, came to the place where the apple was reflecting light. And so, you know, we all got pretty good at that part. She was less good at helping us with form, you know, looking at the shape of the apple. She would come around and, if anybody had drawn a lopsided apple, she would say, apples are perfectly round. I don't remember exactly the word she used, but apples are perfectly shaped. They're not lopsided. So she made us erase them if we drew them lopsided. Now, anybody who's looked at an apple before, you know, knows that they're lopsided. You know, they can grow really lopsided. But, you know, one day I was in my kitchen, I was reflecting on this, you know, years later. You know, I don't know why it even came up, but I was reflecting on this years later, and I found myself cutting my apple in the kitchen and, you know, kind of cutting it along a line of symmetry. You know, basically apples are symmetrical, you know, and I think that's a growth pattern that they have. They kind of grow symmetrically. It's not perfect. They're not perfectly shaped all the way around, but, you know, anywhere, you know, if they're lopsided, you can cut them so that when you cut it in half, they're roughly equal halves. And I realized in that moment, for some reason, cutting that apple made me think about that teacher that had said apples are never lopsided. You know, I've been thinking about this for years. Whenever I see a lopsided apple, why did she think apples weren't lopsided? But as I was cutting it, and I cut it along this line of symmetry, I had a realization or a recollection or a thought that perhaps this teacher had heard in some, and I don't know how or why she got this view, but here's a plausible explanation, at least in my mind. Maybe she had taken a biology class where some teacher told her that apples had grown symmetrically. You know, when apples are symmetrical, and they are, they're roughly symmetrical. And she perhaps misunderstood what symmetrical meant. That symmetrical meant perfectly shaped. She was so stuck in her view. You know, at one point, this one little boy, I mean, we all talked about it when we were 6 or 8 or however old I was in this art class, and we all talked about it. What is she thinking, you know? And one day, this little boy brought in a really lopsided apple and put it on her desk. She did not say a word. I think she just couldn't see it. Say, I think this is what happens with strong views. They screen out things that don't correspond with the view. This is the strength of delusion. When we have a view and things don't correspond with that view, sometimes we simply don't see them. So this is pretty powerful in our minds. A third kind of view, and this one is really pernicious, is a view formed out of our direct experience, and yet perhaps we haven't had direct experience of the entire picture. So the classic story about this is the story of the blind man and the elephant, which actually is a story in the Buddhist suttas. I was kind of fun to stumble into this story as a teaching story in the Buddha suttas. The Buddha talks about this, that you have a bunch of blind people exploring an elephant, and some of them are shown the leg and said, this is an elephant, and some are feeling the tail and saying, this is an elephant, and some are feeling the trunk and they're told, that's the elephant, and some are feeling the tusks, and they're told that's the elephant. And then when they're asked to describe the elephant, they're brought into a group. This is the story in the sutras. They're brought back together, and they said, okay, so tell me, what is an elephant? And one person says, well, it's like a post. Another says, it's like a broom. Someone else says, it's like a prod. And because they've had this direct experience for themselves of feeling, this is the elephant, they start arguing with each other, and they come to blows around arguing about what an elephant is. So in this case, they've had direct experience and created a view out of their direct experience, and then cannot accept that other people may have had a different aspect or seen a different aspect of the situation. So these are different ways that we can be in denial. And the denial from this, basically these views that we form, either from our culture or our experience or misunderstanding. So these first two, the not connecting form of delusion and this denial form of delusion, I would kind of call these psychological or perhaps cultural forms of delusion. The third form of delusion that I mentioned, distortions of perception, this is kind of more fundamental, a more human form of delusion that is based kind of just in how our nervous systems work, how our minds and bodies work. And these are common, I think, across cultures, across people. And the Buddha recognized these, and he highlighted them. He said, these are really important. These are ways that we misunderstand experience. And they're so fundamental that for most of them, we're probably not going to notice these as delusions until somebody actually points out, you should take a look at this. Take a look at this and see if you're seeing things in a distorted way. So there's four basic distortions that the Buddha talks about. He talks about the distortion of seeing what is impermanent as permanent. The distortion of seeing what is suffering as happiness. The distortion of seeing what is unbeautiful as beautiful. And the distortion of seeing what is not self as self. And I'll just talk briefly about these. So the seeing the impermanent as permanent. Now this is kind of, it's almost the way our bodies and minds work in a way. There are kind of really gross versions of this where, you know, we move it, like I talked about before, you know, the belief in the state of romantic love that this relationship is going to do it for the rest of my life and it's going to be perfect and we're always going to be in this state of just being on this lovely cloud. So there's that kind of a seeing what is impermanent as permanent. There's also a kind of a more fundamental way, this kind of like the, you know, our experience is moment by moment changing really rapidly. And something about the way our minds work kind of smooths that out and makes things seem much more continuous and much more stable than it is. So you know, for instance, the way our mind creates the concept, this has to do with how our mind creates concepts. You know, our mind creates a concept of body or hand. And, you know, we experience our hand as something that, you know, if we're not really paying attention to the experience, we have a sense of some kind of solidity or stability of hand. But it's the concept that becomes stable. The concept in our minds is stable. And this is partly, actually, this is a function of our minds. It's designed, actually, to stabilize, I think. It's designed to kind of help us to hold things in place. And yet, if we turn our attention to hand, actually now, you know, just feel what you feel in hand. What is the actual experience? Vibration, tingling, pulsing, pressure, heat, coolness. It's a very lively experience. It's not very stable, or it's a changing experience. So our minds kind of create this, our minds create concepts, and the concepts are stable. And that's the way we're kind of fooled. Another analogy of this that is offered in the suttas is, they call it the analogy of the fire stick. You know, if you move a fire stick, if you have a stick that's on fire, and you move a fire stick rapidly, there creates the illusion of a circle of fire. And that's the mind doing that. You know, the circle isn't there. The circle of fire is not there. But our minds have created this illusion. So this is a kind of, this way of seeing things that are impermanent as permanent is kind of really deep in the way our minds work. So this one, you know, it in a way of reflecting, we can start to recognize, oh yeah, you know, I was kind of assuming that would be permanent. You know, just even simple things. You know, what is it that you are thinking is permanent? What is it that you're thinking of as solid? That's been an exploration I've come to. You know, what is it that I am taking to be solid and permanent in my experience? And then beginning to investigate that. How solid actually is it? This is one way to kind of move into this distortion of perception, distortion of reality. Then there's the second one, seeing what is suffering as happiness. And this one I've mentioned earlier too, this notion of the belief, the view that having what I want will make me happy. You know, that we believe, I mean, we really believe that. And yet, in spite of the evidence to the contrary, you know, that you know, we get what we want, and you know, 2 days later we want something else and we're not so satisfied with that thing, or we're afraid of losing this thing. You know, we get what we want and we're afraid of losing it. Everything in our experience being impermanent, there's a tight connection, a tight coupling between these two, between the impermanence and the suffering. You know, we pin our hopes on impermanent things for happiness. And it is destined to make us unhappy and suffer, because things go away, things disappear. Things are not permanent. So we misunderstand, I think we fundamentally misunderstand, and this is a delusion, we fundamentally misunderstand where happiness comes from. The exploration in our practice is to look at the wanting itself. Look at the that craving to have what we want. And we start to see that when the wanting goes away, I mean, the getting what we want is part of the pleasure of happiness. Another aspect, and actually the stronger aspect of the happiness that comes from getting what we want, is because the wanting goes away when we get what we want. But if we actually pay attention to the wanting itself, if we see that the wanting disappears, You're just imagining for yourself. If there was something that you wanted, and there was a kind of a sense of dissatisfaction about not having it, I mean, even in your mind, if you imagined if the wanting, the desire for that thing went away, doesn't the dissatisfaction, the suffering, go away around that? It is the wanting that causes the suffering. It's not the not having that causes the suffering. It's the wanting that causes the suffering. And this is our fundamental misunderstanding. We think it's the not having. And we misunderstand where happiness lies. And so the happiness, a deeper kind of happiness, comes from letting go rather than holding on, than getting things that we want. The seeing the beautiful in the unbeautiful. This one's a little more, this one's not so culturally correct for us. So I'll just put it out there. You know, sometimes these teachings are challenging for us, but you know, this is what is in the teaching, and I like to, you know, let's just explore it. Let's chew on it for a little while. And the classic teaching around this is that the body is not beautiful, and that we misperceive the body as beautiful. And this is a large part of, you know, our where lust arises from, is a kind of misseeing the body as beautiful. So, you know, one reflection along these lines is to think about what is it? You know, I mean, think about the body. I went to this Body World exhibit recently that was in San Jose. And, you know, you see the body stripped of skin is kind of a disturbing thing. One of my teachers says that, you know, Joseph Goldstein, he comments that, yeah, the body, it's beautiful once it's wrapped up in skin. You know, that's that, you know, it's all, we think about all the stuff inside, and, you know, if you cut yourself open, or, you know, I had a friend who broke her arm, and it was a dramatic break, and her bone was sticking out of her skin, and it's like, that's not so beautiful. You know, we vision or think about the inside of our body, and there's a little bit of a sense of, ooh, you know, maybe not so beautiful. But when it's kind of covered in skin, we're attuned to the, you know, the way the light reflects from the skin, and or maybe the curl of the lip, or, you know, the shape of an eye, and there's little bits that we find attractive and we're drawn to. One of my other colleagues points out to the fact that, think about the parts that you're really drawn to, you know, the skin, the hair, things like that. Most of what we're attracted to are the dead bits of our body. You know, the skin is in the process of sloughing off, and the hair is not alive. It's also dead. It's just a reflection. So again, this one's challenging for us, but I'll just put it out there, just let you, you know, chew on it for now. The last one, I think, is the most fundamental. This is seeing what is not self to be self. And this can be a whole talk. In fact, I gave 4 talks on this topic at one point, exploring this thread, this theme. But basically, I'll just mention the, you know, one kind of key way to explore this and look at this. You know, we have a kind of a deeply held feeling of being kind of this solid entity. There's this continuity that we feel stretching over our lives. It's like we can remember when we were 5 years old in the class with the teacher who talked about apples. And you know, it's like, well, of course it's the same person here. So there's this thread of continuity, this thread of experience that can be remembered. And partly, I think, because of that thread of continuity, there's the imputation of there being a thing that has followed from when we were born all the way until now, if there's some entity there. And the understanding around this is it's not that there's nothing here. I mean, the teaching around not-self is not that there's nothing here, but that there's, again, it's a fundamental misunderstanding of what is happening and an imputation of this thingness to what is essentially a process. That our lives are simply an unfolding river of changing experience, of thoughts, of memories, of emotions, of bodily experience, of sights, of sounds, and the way that our brains work and our minds store information, that's kind of creating this illusion of continuity. But it's a process. It's a process. Even the creation of the idea of self is a process. It's simply another process that's happening in our minds. So with these misperceptions, we confuse these misperceptions with reality. You know, this perceptual process is prone to error because of these distortions, because of these fundamental ways that we misunderstand our experience. And these are very fundamental ways. You know, they're not so easy to see. So part of the teaching around this is just to hear that these are distortions and begin to explore in your experience. So when you feel something is permanent, what is it that you are taking to be permanent? Explore that. What is it that you're taking to be beautiful? Explore that. How are you experiencing happiness? And what is it that you are taking to be happiness? Or where are you looking for happiness? Perhaps that's a better way to put it. Where are you looking for happiness? And how reliable is that happiness? And then looking at what you assume to be I, me, mine. A great tool for us in navigating these is looking at suffering. Because these distortions, all of them that I've talked about, you know, the ones, the psychological, the cultural, as well as these really more fundamental ones, at some level they're going to create some dissonance for us. We may notice, you know, that... You know, we're miserable all the time, or we're feeling depressed or sad, and what is it about? You know, the suffering is our guide. Understanding suffering is part of the way to navigate uncovering these delusions. When we understand suffering, we begin to strip away our views and beliefs. We begin to see how our views and our beliefs contribute to our suffering, to our dissatisfaction. So using suffering as a guide. And the key is the willingness to understand it. And now this also might mean using suffering not only internally, but in the world. You know, we may behave in a way that, you know, from our perspective, maybe we're behaving, you know, with the best of intentions. And yet we see that someone is hurt or someone is, you know, someone else suffers as a result of some way that we've behaved. Now, you know, there are times when we have to let go of other people's karma, you know, that even in the best of intentions, if we're speaking out of the best of intentions, sometimes where people aren't ready, they're not ready to receive what has been said or offered or done. And so sometimes we just have to let go. But on the other hand, we also can't hide behind that and say, oh, it's their karma. You know, I acted with good intentions, so it's their karma. I think when we see, especially repeatedly, that we may be doing something that creates a sense of a situation of harm in others, what we're asked to do is reflect. Is there something I didn't understand here? Is there something that I can learn here? I have a great example of this, but we're getting to the end of time, so, so I should probably stop. So basically what I'm talking about here is, I mean, part of this is bringing the reflection of wisdom to, you know, understanding these kind of fundamental delusions, using this understanding from the capacity that we have of reflecting, reviewing experience. You know, how am I seeing the world through these distortions? Or am I seeing the world through these distortions? Using our capacity to reflect. And as we use, this is kind of the wisdom of the Buddhist teachings, then we actually begin to understand when the distortions begin to fall away and we can actually see things more clearly, we understand the truth of them, of these teachings more directly. And it's not just an idea then it's directly confirmed. And this is insight. This is the wisdom of insight. So I should stop. Thank you for your attention. I'm sorry I talked way too long, so that didn't have an opportunity for questions.
Not too long. Perfect. Thank you. We don't have time for questions, but if you can hang around during our
I can, yes,
hour,
yes. I'll be happy to talk with you more during the time, yes.
So, before that, do we have any announcements this morning?
Actually, I have a couple of announcements. Most of you probably know, but maybe some don't, that GBF once a month creates a dinner for the Larkin Street Youth Center. We've been doing this for years, and you point out for another place. And people who participate usually find it an enjoyable, rewarding experience. Anyway, I'm trying to bring more volunteers into this. So if you're interested in participating, something like this, the coming one will be this Saturday. It's always the third Saturday of the month. Just contact me outside, and I'll add your name to the list of possible volunteers when it comes up. Second announcement is also, even though the Castro Street Fair seems like a gazillion time away from now, it does take time to prepare it. And we didn't do it last year because of lack of organization and various other reasons. But the steering committee did decide that that would be a good thing if we could get it together to have a booth at the Castro Street Fair. And we have the fundamental equipment needed for that. We just need to have the organization behind it. So I'd like to see if I get a group to look into that too. It's not a whole lot of work, but there is some work, especially when it gets close to the fair. So if you're interested in participating in that, you know, see the outside for that too.
How long is the thing on Saturdays, cooking dinner?
I ask people to come around 2 o'clock. We usually done at 6:30. But, you know, people have plans, so they can come and go as they please. It's nice that you say the whole thing, but a lot of times you have people come for a few hours and they do another commitment.
Thank you.
Sure.
Yes, GBF has an account at Community Thrift, which is located on 17th and Valencia. It's that Pepto-Bismol pink building. They take donations every day between 10 and 5. I would suggest you call first because they have a whole list of things they do and don't accept. But it's a great way to help GBF stay funded. And if you have anything you're looking to get rid of, it's a great way to do that. Or if you know someone who's renovating, or for whatever reason, there are some items, you could donate it there and we benefit.
There's a list on the website.
Yes, that's true.
I am the host today, and there's a few things to eat, and please help yourself, and yourself to tea, and if you need to, you should wash your cup with warm, soapy water. You're done, put it away, the rack, please. There's a Donna bowl, and the suggested offering is $5 to $8, but give what feels right for you. And then there's a sign-up sheet on the credenza, if you care to sign up. Be on the list, And I think a few people sometimes meet at 12:30 or so outside the front door for lunch. So please invite yourself to that. Thank you.
Jerry?
Yes. Andrea, thank you for coming today to speak. It was great.
You're welcome.
And next week we have open discussion.
And I just have a reminder that the Zen Center book sale is happening this coming Saturday. The book sale benefits the prison project, where we set up pen pals. A number of people in this group volunteer for that and have been pen pals, Dharma pen pals in prisons. It's a great book sale. Buddhists have good taste in books. So there's all kinds of good stuff there. So, and they also are taking donations up until the book sale. So you can drop things off at the Zen Center if you didn't bring things for me to take today. But just keep in mind that next Saturday, I think starting at 11 o'clock in the morning, is the book sale. And I posted information about it on our Yahoo group if you want the address or times or anything.
It's like that. City Center?
Sorry?
The City Center?
Is that City Center? Yeah. I'm Paige Laguna. Any other announcements? Well, let's gather for offering merit.
Would you like to
Sure. Is it a circle?
We do a circle.
May the beneficial results of our practice together today be offered to support the welfare, the happiness, the liberation of all beings everywhere. May all beings be happy. May all beings be healthy. May all beings be safe. May all beings live with ease. May all beings be free from suffering.
Thank you for listening to the Gay Buddhist Forum. If you would like to hear several new talks per month and be notified of upcoming speakers so you can participate live, please subscribe to this podcast, like us on Facebook, and join our mailing list by visiting gaybuddhist.org.